What do I do if I have no idea what I want to do with my life? When I'm in the middle of my career and realize my work doesn't have meaning or purpose to me anymore? How do we tell our friends and family that we want to completely change our career? Where should we start in making such a big life change? And how can I know what to change careers to? This podcast was created to answer these very questions. My name is Travis Robinson, and you're listening to The Everyday Worker. There's so many struggles that always seem to come with making a career change. Whatever situation you find yourself in, it's, you know, whether it's your family that might be like telling you that you're crazy for trying to make a career change, or whether it's financial problems that it just might bring that fear that you shouldn't be making this big change in your life. But one thing that we really want to dig into more today is what you can be doing and what things you can look out for when you're making these major changes. Because our guest today has made quite a few changes in her career and has really been able to create the career and life that she's wanted to. And so I'm really excited to have her on the podcast today. And Jenna, I really appreciate you for being here with me.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So I was hoping that you could maybe start off by introducing yourself and just share like a little bit about where you grew up and what you studied in school, and then like a quick overview of your career so far.
Sure. So I actually grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And then I went to school at Lehigh University. Have you ever heard of it?
I haven't. No, I looked it up though.
Yeah. So it's Eastern Pennsylvania. It's typically an engineering school, but I went there and I got a double major in finance and marketing. And so coming from there, like I quickly transitioned when I went into kind of full-time work, and I was an investment banker. And I realized quite quickly that lifestyle was super not for me. I was working like 100 hours a week. I was a crazy person. So I really got to this point where I just couldn't handle it anymore. And I think for a lot of people in their careers, especially early on, we feel really guilty if we can't handle it. Mm-hmm. When you got to my point where I was physically unwell, mentally unwell, emotionally unwell, spiritually unwell, like all the unwells that you could possibly be, my dad said something to me that was really important and honestly has carried through with me throughout my entire career. He said, you know, Jenna, it's important to be loyal to a company, but this company is only going to be as loyal to you as what makes financial sense for them. So once I finally realized that for myself, I was okay with leaving that opportunity. And then I went worked at the New York Stock Exchange for a couple of years, which was super fun. I regained my confidence. I like loved working there. But I realized after 2 years that I wasn't very good at finance, which is a terrible place to realize that you're not good at finance on Wall Street. And so I just realized this is probably not what I want to do. And I started to do a little bit of research on what were the things that I wanted to be doing. And so I found sales and I found startups. And I said, I think I want to be a part of this. And I made a massive career pivot and went from Wall Street to working at an itty bitty startup called themuse.com, which was a career advice site. And I was there for about 2-3 years before I transitioned and actually launched my business full time while moving from New York City to Nashville. So I have a career coaching business, a professional development company for women where I specialize in helping mid to senior level women change their careers and change their lives.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah. So many questions that I have. And so something that really stuck out to me about your story is the fact that you went into investment banking.
Yeah.
And so I had a buddy of mine who he's graduating from college really soon, and he's been doing a ton of internships and working really hard to land a great opportunity in investment banking after he graduates. Mm-hmm. And so I actually had him on the podcast, and just talking with him, there's so much time and work and planning that goes into wanting to be successful in investment banking from what he makes it seem like. And so I'm really curious, like, what was your like motivation, or what was your thinking behind going into it?
Can I honestly tell you, and this is going to be so annoying to people that want to be investment bankers, I never wanted to be an investment banker. It was not really, I fell into the role. I know that sounds crazy, but I didn't grow up in a, my dad was an entrepreneur and a blue collar, he was in construction. So like Wall Street was very, very far from what I knew and what I was experiencing and what I was really taught. So I know that a lot of guys that I went to school with actually really wanted to be investment bankers. And then here's Jenna, who's, you know, this girl who really doesn't care. I ended up getting a job in investment banking. I knew that it was a solid job opportunity. And my finance professor, who actually I still keep in touch with, and she actually moved to Tennessee, which is crazy. She encouraged me to go to this investment banking interview. And I got in there and I was like, I really don't know if I want to do this, but it seems like it's a great job opportunity after school. So if they'll hire me, it's great. I'll do it. And I don't feel like I fully understood. I knew that it was a lot of work, but I don't think I understood how much you had to really love that type of work to do well in it, one, and then two, to just feel like you're there for a purpose. I was not gifted in that area. I could do the work. I was fine at it, but that's not really where I felt myself thrive. That was not doing Excel spreadsheets till 2 o'clock in the morning about healthcare companies was not interesting to me at all whatsoever. So it was a big wake-up call when I actually got into the full-time position and realized, oh my gosh, I hate this. This is terrible.
Yeah.
But some people love it. You know, some people really do really strive to have that role and they are in it for 2 years, maybe 4 years, maybe they're in it for their whole career. And for some people, it does suit them. Just for me and my personality and how I'm gifted and how I'm wired, it just wasn't for me.
Mm. So that's interesting that you said you knew that it was like this solid job opportunity.
Totally.
And I know that that's, for a lot of people, that's a hard thing when you are in a position where from the outside looking in, it's like a really great opportunity or it's really solid opportunity. But it just doesn't sit right with you and it's not something that you're thriving in. I mean, how were you able to overcome that thought and even just the social pressure of looking like an idiot that you're turning your back on this solid opportunity?
Gosh, it was really hard. I've got to be honest. I know that the year after I left my investment banking job, because you also have to remember that when you're working 100 hours a week, you're really in almost like a cult within the company because you are a slave to the job. And so the culture is very, you have to be at the company, you have to give the company all of your time. Like it's very much that mentality. And so when I did leave, I was really, really worried that my coworkers at my investment banking company were going to think that I was dumb. I was worried that they were going to think that I was silly. I was worried that they were going to think that I wasn't smart, like all the different things. And probably some of them did, to be perfectly honest. I'm sure they did. But I just knew I had to go with my gut and I had to get away from something that was not life-giving. And life is just too short to be as miserable as I was. Like I said, when the physical ramifications start to come in and it's really starting to affect you, not only just mentally and you're exhausted, but like other physical things, I was starting to get sick all the time. It was an awful, awful experience for me. And so I realized that if I wanted to keep going, I needed to leave.
So when you decided to make that decision to leave, so you said you went and you worked in the stock exchange, is that correct?
Yes, I worked at the stock exchange. And honestly, it was the worst interview I've ever gone on because I was at the office till really late the night before, probably like 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm sure. And I had an 8 a.m. interview at the New York Stock Exchange. And I remember one of the managing directors asked me, so can you walk me through like how all the financial statements work together, which I should know the answer to at that time. I don't remember now. But I remember thinking to myself, I told her, I looked at her and I said, honestly, I just don't know the answer right now. I'm too tired. And that's how I answered the question. She goes, that's honest. I appreciate it. I said, I'll get back to you after the interview. And they still gave me the job. So I always joke that they saved me from investment banking. I truly don't know what they saw because it was not a very good interview. But I did end up working there. I got the interview opportunity through a sorority sister from Lehigh, who was like, hey, you're miserable. Here's like, you should just check out this job, see if you're interested. I'm happy to put in a good word. So I was very grateful for that because when you are working 100 hours a week, it's really hard to search for a job.
Yeah. So going into doing the stock exchange, were you still kind of in this mindset that you're trying to make this whole like you're still trying to use what you studied in school and finance. Yep. And you know, it's kind of still in that same world, right? You didn't make this major pivot yet. And so, yeah, I mean, was that your hope? Was that you could still kind of salvage the degree that you spent all this time getting?
I think partially that, and then partially it was the first opportunity that came up. And that sounds so bad, and I would never recommend that to most clients. But again, because of the how I was feeling physically, it was like, I need to just get out. And then also, it was a little bit more creative. So what my team did, or the team that I was on, was we would pitch CEOs and CFOs of IPOing companies why they should list their stock on the New York Stock Exchange versus NASDAQ. So it wasn't straight finance. Like, I wasn't doing Excel models and doing all that kind of stuff. That wasn't really happening. It was more data driven and it was more sales related. There was some marketing involved with that. And then one day when I was at work, they put me in front of a camera and said, you're going to report live from the trading floor so we can funnel this webcast back to the employees of this IPOing company. I had no idea what I was doing. So it was way more than just, it was still in finance. Yes, of course, obviously the New York Stock Exchange, but it wasn't as functionally finance, if that makes sense.
Hmm. Yeah, I got you. So going from that first job to the stock exchange, so you made that change because from what it sounds like, that was kind of life or death situation kind of deal.
That sounds so dramatic, but it really was at that time.
But then now going from the stock exchange to making a major pivot and going to work at the startup. So tell me about that process that you went through, like internally and your thinking, and also externally, what did you do to really like feel confident in making that change?
Yeah. So a lot of what I did during that transition is what I teach people to do now. So I spent a lot of time really understanding what was I good at? What did I want to do? What was I doing when I felt like I was thriving? What were the things I hated? And I feel like a lot of when we're young, we're taught to try and overcome our weaknesses to a degree that I actually think is unhealthy. Where instead what I did was I wanted to focus on what are the things that I'm really good at and how can I double down on those? Of course, there's always going to be something I want to improve. That's just naturally work, right? But why am I trying to be really great at finance when I'm not really great at finance? And so for me, it was this big aha moment where I was like, wow, actually, I might be really great at sales. I did all these informational interviews. I networked a ton. And through that process and what I've now turned into my signature course that I teach and walk people through, I really created a system and a process to get in front of the right people, get past the applicant tracking systems, and actually talk to a real human. And I ended up landing the job at the Muse, which was a very big change, right? I went from a more finance company to a sales role where I had no experience in sales. I had never even, Travis, I had never even had like a retail job. So when I say that I had no formal sales experience, I truly mean I had no formal sales experience. But looking back on that and asking the director of sales at the time or VP of sales, why did you hire me? He said, you could sell yourself. You knew yourself so well. And I said, if she knows herself so well, she'll figure out how to do it here. So that's a little bit about that.
I like that. So how did you even feel confident in going and applying to that role? Like not confidence just in yourself and your skills and abilities, but confidence that you would like the job.
Yeah. So I did a lot of research beforehand. So that's one of the things that I really recommend for most people is to spend some time exploring and talking to people in sales roles. So I would reach out to people on LinkedIn at companies that I admired in roles that I was interested in. And I would say, hey, I know you're really probably really busy, but if you have 10 to 15 minutes of, I'd love to take 10 to 15 minutes of your time and learn a little bit more about your job. I'm thinking about making a career change, but I'm not sure if I really want to do this or not. Would you be open to chatting? And more often than not, people were open to having the conversation. And if the conversation went well, then my resume would get inputted into their referral system. So it was a great way for me to discern, like, what's a day in the life look like? What does success in this career over the long term look like? What will I functionally be doing on a day-to-day basis? And how will I progress? So when I was asking a lot of those questions, it helped me discern that, hey, yes, sales is something that I want to learn. And then even more long-term for me in my career, I knew that I wanted to launch a business someday. So sales is obviously a huge component to being successful in business.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, that's something that I tell people all the time is people think I'm crazy when I tell them just connect with people on LinkedIn that have jobs that you're interested in. Send them a message and say, hey, can I have a 15-minute conversation with you on the phone? And that's been like just for myself and my own learning about different careers and professions.
Yes.
It's been really cool doing that. And it's been really, what I always tell people, it's, you'll be shocked at how willing and happy people are to have those conversations with you. Because a lot of times people aren't like interested in like really digging deep into like what you do on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, people like talking about themselves. And so it's not, I think people actually really enjoy it if you're respectful about it, you know?
Yeah, you've got to come to the table prepared with some questions. The worst thing that you can do is be like, so tell me about your career. That's such a terrible question to ask. You need to really come in with some specific objectives that you want to get out of that, and also to make it valuable for the other person. Find out what interests them. Find out what they're struggling with. Find out if you can refer them to somebody else. And if you start that early, it's going to make any job transition that you make so much easier, because the key to finding a new job isn't applying to a zillion jobs online. That is not the key. So let me say that again for anyone that's listening. Do not spend all your time applying online to the online abyss where the resume snatchers will take your resume, right? You need to be connecting with real human beings. And if you're struggling with that, it is okay. No one taught you how to do that, but it's important that you get help, because if you learn that early in your career, it's going to help you throughout the entirety of your career.
Yeah. Wow. That's good stuff. What would you say is maybe like three important things that you learned in your own career changing journey that my listeners should know?
Oh gosh. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's a zillion different things, but I would say, I would say specifically is go with your gut, and be really honest with yourself about what your value system is and your priorities are. That would be the first thing. And then I would say the second thing is ask a lot of questions in the interview process, because you are interviewing them as much as they're interviewing you. A lot of people will see like, oh gosh, wow, this company looks so cool. They have a ping pong table and they serve beer on Fridays. And like, I want to work there. And then the team sucks, right? They get in and they're like, this is no different than the other company I was a part of. So you want to be really thoughtful about the questions that you are asking to discern, is this a good fit for me? And then I would say the last piece of that puzzle would be to, along with kind of go with your gut on an organization, but be honest about what success means to you. So a lot of people have defined success by what their parents think, right? Or they've defined success by what their coworkers might think of them. Or they've defined success by what the world's version of success is, whether it's monetarily or titles, whatever that may look like. You have to decide for yourself what success in your career looks like. And be honest, if it's not the world's version of success, that is okay. And so once you get clear on that, it actually helps making decisions in your job and in your career so much easier.
Yeah. So there's a couple of questions I have off of these three things. So for the first one, you talked about going with your gut.
Yeah.
Something that when I've talked to my clients is that oftentimes people know, like in a perfect world, if you know they didn't have to worry about money or whatever, a lot of people know what they would like to do, but because it's maybe not like it doesn't provide a lot of money or is not very financially stable, they don't want to go for that. Do you run into that a lot, and how do you help people to overcome this idea when they know what they want to do, but it's not like this traditional route that's going to make them enough money, maybe?
Yeah. So it sounds like money is the number one driver. So you have to get honest with yourself and say, like, money actually is important to me. So maybe I could do this thing that interests me. Let's say it's like social work, for instance, of a profession that we know probably you're not going to be making $1 million doing. Mm-hmm. So let's say you want to do social work, but you're like, actually, I value making X amount of dollars in my career. You need to not shame yourself for that and figure out other ways that you can give back from a social perspective. Or, you know, if let's say you want to be a musician, right? I live in Nashville. There's a lot of musicians, right? So maybe it's like, yes, I want to be a musician, but what can I do in the meantime that's going to help me pay my bills? Because the reality is we work and we get paid to work. And so a lot of people, I feel like, especially in the newer generation, or the newer folks that are in the workforce, like we almost feel bad that we want to make money. I don't think that's true. I don't think you need to feel bad about it, but you have to get honest with yourselves about the priorities that you have. And if you keep on butting up against that question, you need to really think about, actually, I do care about money. That's okay. But that's going to help me make better decisions for the future.
I like that. And then the other thought that I had, so your third important thing that you shared was defining what success means to you. Is that right?
Yep.
And so when someone is going through that process of defining success, I mean, how does someone create this realistic expectation of success. Because a lot of people might be like, you know, I want to work 2 hours a week and make $1 million kind of thing.
Sure.
And so what are some guidelines maybe that people can go about when they're defining this level of success for themselves?
Yeah, I think that maybe it's not even defining it so specifically like that, but it's more goes back to that value system of like, for me, success looks like the ability to work on whatever projects I want to work on. That's really, really important to me, and to make a living where I can support myself and support my family. And I've generally have an idea of what the lowest amount of that could be, right? So for me, when I went out on my, I'm asking myself the same questions, right? Even though I own my own business and I'm not in a corporate environment, I'm still asking myself those questions all the time because, you know, entrepreneurship, that people will tell you what success looks like. It looks like raising funding. It looks like getting on the cover of Forbes magazine. Like you could look at all of these things. It's just different, right? I'm an entrepreneurship. You guys are in corporate most likely if you're listening. But I think it really comes down to what's important for you to finish at the end of your career. A question you could ask yourself is, at my retirement party, what do I want people to say about me? And what projects do I want to have completed? Those are kind of great ways to create a framework for answering that question.
I really like that. Yeah. Something that I really loved about your career journey that you've taken is that it didn't seem like you didn't really hesitate to make these changes in your career. And what I mean by that is that, what I mean by that is that when I've talked to people, it almost seems like my clients are looking for the right choice to make or the wrong choice, as opposed to seeing this career as a process that builds on each other every time a change is made.
Right.
And you know, if you're always trying to look, if you're trying to make a career change and you're looking for the right answer, you're looking for that right career, I don't know if you're ever going to find it. You know,
no.
You're never going to have that confidence to change. So what are your thoughts on this idea that you only have one shot to make a career change, and if it's wrong, then you've totally screwed up your life?
Yeah, I think that's not true 100% of the time. So I think you actually have people on two ends of the spectrum. You have the people who very much so think like that, right? Like if I don't make a decision, if I don't find the right opportunity, then I'm going to screw up the rest of my life. And then on the other hand, you have people who are reactive to their career where they just take any opportunity that comes their way and they're not strategic at all. I feel like there's somewhere in the middle that we need to meet or that's most healthy, right? So yes, think thoughtfully about your career and think about strategic moves, but don't hold yourself back so much that you don't move forward. Because I can honestly say, I did have questions when I went to Muse, like, was this a dumb choice? I took a salary cut. Yeah. Like, this is a really big, bold choice. But I can look back and say, like, it was what I made of it. It's success is what you make of it. And so when you look at it from that perspective, you never look at an opportunity as like that ruined my career, but rather we always learn something, even if we learn it's something we don't want.
I like that. So for yourself, and maybe I don't know if you'll like this question, but yeah. when you started coaching full time, did you have the mentality like this is something that I'm going to be doing for the rest of my career? Or do you kind of have the mentality that you love what you're doing right now, doing it, but you're also learning about yourself and figuring out, you know, what are options for you in your life?
That's a very apt question because I feel like I just asked myself that yesterday. you know, early on in my career, I wanted to, when I went full time working for myself, my big motivation was I wanted flexibility and freedom. I hate it. And I was a terrible employee because I didn't like people telling me I had to be in at a certain time. I didn't like people telling, and to be fair, I was a great employee, but I just didn't like having to be somewhere or having to ask off for work, or I wasn't allowed to wear what I wanted to wear. Like it just felt too stuffy for me personally. Mm-hmm. So freedom and flexibility was really important. I didn't want to stay in New York City. I wanted to move to the South. I want to have children one day. So there was a lot of moving pieces that I felt like I wanted to make in order to have that flexibility and freedom. So in the beginning, I was just trying to, how do I create more time and more space? As I've progressed in my business and in my career, we've evolved so many times in the business, and we're going to continue to evolve. And I think the answer is, do I think I'll be doing you know, working with professional development for women forever? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I would say probably not, but it's not because I don't love it. It's just because there might be different seasons for different things.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that that's your answer, because people have been asking me that since I started coaching this year of, you know, what's my long-term goal with it. And I just say, I don't know. Like, I see this as a step in my career, and
yes,
you know, I don't think I have to have it all planned out.
Yeah.
And that's going to limit me, you know?
I agree. And I think to some extent it is important to have, like, if I were to stay in this business, what would my long-term goals be? Because I feel like early on in my business, I didn't have those. And I, looking back, I think I could have gotten farther faster if I had those. However, I think it's important to have a plan, but be nimble if that plan changes, and don't like have a total meltdown if it doesn't go your way.
Totally. So for myself, I studied mechanical engineering in college, and going from this career path of engineering, and, you know, it has a certain level of, I don't know what you want to call it, prestige, I guess. Sure. And
same with investment banking, I get it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where I'm going with it is, you know, going from some level of prestige to coaching, and like how was that process for you? Was it difficult to just mentally, you know, be able to be confident in telling people that you're a coach?
Yeah. I've gone through many iterations of that. I think it was harder for me to move from the New York Stock Exchange to the Muse, actually, and tell people that I had moved into sales, because everyone was like, wait, why? Why did you do that? You were making a good, why? Mm-hmm. it was hard for my parents probably to hear that. But it was less hard for me to move to the coach aspect of it. It's actually been harder for me to step out of saying that I'm a coach. If you heard me earlier, I kind of stumbled over describing what I do, because I'm trying to say that I don't want to say not just a coach, because being just a coach is totally fine, but I'm the CEO of my business. And as we're looking to scale and grow that and become more of a brand and provide a service to professional women, I have to reframe how I view myself in my business. So yes, do I do coaching in my business? Yes, but I'm the CEO of my business. And that little mindset tweak has helped me a lot in thinking bigger about my business as if it's a real business and not just a coaching practice. Does that make sense? Mm.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm really curious to hear your thoughts also, because I know you had mentioned before that in a lot of the things that you do, your identity is kind of wrapped up or tied into the things that you do. And so through that process of changing from this prestigious investment making to then being the CEO and coaching, I mean, how has your identity played a role throughout that?
Yeah, it's been an evolving process, and I think it always will be. I think we, one, live in a society where what do you do is the first question when you meet somebody, right?
Yep.
So it's very much associated with who we are is what we do. Couple that with my name is my business, and my business is, it's just very complicated, right? I would say for me, I constantly have to check myself that I am not associating my worth with how the business is doing. And I've had to learn, and I'm still learning, so I'm not excellent at this, how to separate myself emotionally from that and look more pragmatically at my business versus getting all emotionally swept up in it. It's very hard to do. But when we get our identity correct, that our identity isn't in our job, that's just a part of who we are, it really helps us make more thoughtful decisions and more rational decisions when it comes to our career.
Hmm. Well, I feel like too that oftentimes if you're going to make a major change in your career, sometimes that's going to be, you're going to have to take a step down as far as like on a pay scale, right? And
not always, but you sometimes have to.
Right, sometimes. And it can be easy to feel like you are stepping down in your identity as well. But I think if you detach your identity from what you're doing, then you don't have to feel like, you're stepping back in your own actual identity, your own personal life.
Sure.
There's a quote that I forget exactly what it is by Brendan Burchard, but he basically says something like, you're not afraid to take risks, but you're afraid to be seen starting small.
That's good.
And I really love that because, you know, it's when you start something new, it's so embarrassing to be seen making all these new mistakes and feeling like you don't know what you're doing, especially if you are coming from a role where you had some level of success and prestige, and it's hard to make that change, you know?
Yeah, I think it's honestly half of your career is about the inside job that you're doing. And a lot of people just want me to give them their practical three steps to land your dream job, or like, here's five tweaks to your resume. And those are important for sure. But if you're not doing the internal work first and you're just using strategies, you're not going to be successful. Meaning success in this instance, it's specifically if you're trying to change jobs or if you're trying to grow within your career, you will be not successful in that if you don't work on the internal stuff that's going on with you first.
I like that. What would you say is maybe the biggest internal challenge that people face that, or I guess the biggest thing that people overlook that they don't deal with inside themselves?
Yeah, gosh, that's a hard question. I would say, and I work predominantly with women, so I'm going to speak to that more, but I think this is applicable to men because I've worked with men as well. I would say the ability to believe that you deserve to be in the room. What often happens with people when they go into an interview or something like that, there is this subconscious like nagging in their ear saying like, you don't deserve to be here. You actually aren't smart enough to do this. I don't think you could do it. And whenever you think like that, you start to act like that and you start to present your answers like that. And so really you have to change your belief structure about who you are and what value you have to bring to the table. And I believe that there truly is a way to do that in a humble way. Like I can honestly tell you, I'm really good at writing, coaching, and speaking. I am not very good at Excel spreadsheets, project management, and other things. So by identifying both our strengths and our weaknesses, we can confidently come in and say, yes, I believe I'm good at these things and I believe I can bring value. The people that do that are more successful in their career because not only do they believe it's possible for them, they convince everybody else around them that that vision is real.
Yeah. And I think that's totally an ongoing process throughout your whole life.
100%.
You constantly have to be, you know, learning how to believe in yourself and really be confident in that. I mean, just yesterday I was a guest on somebody else's podcast, and I've been a guest on a few podcasts before, but I always have to like remind myself and put myself in that mindset that I deserve to be on a podcast in a humble way, not a prideful way, but in a way that I'm being confident in myself, just like you were saying.
Yeah. So. And I think a lot of people, and especially I find this when people don't apply to jobs unless they're like 95% qualified for, I'm like, why? Why would you do that? Why wouldn't you put your hat in the ring? Who knows what could happen? I know for myself, I mean, I had zero sales experience and I got a sales job, right? So yeah. I believe it's more possible. And if people even just, and same thing goes for you were talking about reaching out to people on LinkedIn. People just are afraid to get rejected so much that they don't actually put themselves out there at all.
Yep. I like that a lot. What would you say is or has been the most challenging thing that you've faced in your entire career?
That's a really hard question. I would say let's talk corporate and then I can talk business. How about that?
Okay, sure.
So I would say from a corporate perspective, my toughest time truly was when I was in investment banking. Probably is really obvious, right? For me, that was just a really dark, I call it the lost year. I feel like I lost a year. But I also look back on that very fondly now from the sense of it was such a catalyst for me showing up at who I was and owning that, you know what, I'm not good at this. I don't have to stay here. I can move on and that's okay. I was very much a people pleaser for most of my life and I'm still recovering from it. But I think that was such a terrible time for me. But I can also say that I look back and I had the head of investment banking of my group was so gracious to me and so kind when I left that I thought, what a great leader, one, and two, I want to be a great leader like that. That whenever somebody, you know, leaves me or, you know, I'm managing a team or something like that and somebody moves on, I want to have that grace and kindness that he extended to me. He literally said to me when I quit, you're going to change the world. I said it to you in your interview and I'm just going to say it to you again. Like who says things like that? So awesome. I think it showed me, as much as it was a terrible time, it also showed me like some beautiful parts. And then for my business, I would say the hardest thing of owning a business is the isolation around it. Especially as, and you know this, as a content creator, it's very vulnerable to create content daily. and to put all this work into doing things for free. And then you have people that troll you on, you know, LinkedIn or troll you on your, it's so beyond me. Why would you spend time doing that? You have other problems, but, it's happened so many times to me, and that is really hard because again, I have to constantly remind myself that my business is not my identity. They don't know me for real. If they were in front of me, you know, you have to go through that whole narrative. So keeping focused and, not feeling isolated has been the biggest challenge.
So I'm really curious because your investment making time was the dark ages of your life, it sounds like. And do you feel like you would have been able to find the right path for yourself in your career if you didn't go down that wrong path of investment making?
Absolutely not. I think it would take me longer, to be honest.
Really?
I think it would have taken me longer to figure out how I was wired because I was kind of a pressure cooker, right? I had to figure it out. And you know, you're in your early 20s and you're just trying to figure out how do I adult, period. So it was kind of a perfect mixture of that. I was having a crisis of faith at the time. Like it was a bunch of stuff happening all at the same time. So for me though, I can honestly say I'm so grateful that happened early in my career and not midway through my career because I don't know if we would be talking today if that didn't happen.
Interesting. Why do you think that it wouldn't? I mean, you talked about like it was a pressure cooker, but I mean, is there any other thoughts of why it's so important? Because I just think that something that I talk with clients about is, you know, being grateful for the hard time that you're having, but like being grateful for the jobs that you have had, even if you don't like them. And I just wonder if there's anything else you wanted to add to that.
Yeah, I think it helped me realize that, you know, that transition, I was grateful for the friend who introduced me to the New York Stock Exchange, but the transition that it was all building upon each other, kind of what you said. And when I got to the Muse, I realized, dang, I'm actually pretty good at changing jobs and like doing them well. And I can think I can help other people who are feeling like they don't have a choice or they can't escape or they shouldn't because their version of success looks like X, Y, Z. And that was really important for me to help people who had, you know, struggling in the same way that I was.
Hmm. Awesome. Well, so I got one more question for you.
Sure.
As we're getting to the end here, but before I ask that, if people want to work with you or find you and look at the awesome content you're creating, sure, where can they go?
So there are two places that I recommend. One, I'm on LinkedIn all day, every day. I post about 3 times per day. So we have a lot of free content over there. So if you just want to connect with me and tell me that you heard me on this podcast. And then we actually have a free training that you can go to. It's www.genevieviano.com/masterclass. And it's how to land your dream job without losing your resume to the online abyss. So those will be the two places.
Awesome. Cool. I'll make sure to get some links to those.
Perfect.
So it's genevieviano.com/masterclass, right?
Correct.
Awesome. Cool. So my last question for you is, what does it mean to you to have a fulfilling career?
I would say for me, it is the opportunity to create something of value into the world. Creation for me is a really one of my largest things that I value, the opportunity to create something that is valuable to somebody else and that's going to help somebody. So if I've done that at the end of my career, that will be fulfilling. I also would say that as I'm getting older and I've gotten married and I'm thinking about kids, the word legacy keeps coming to my brain of like, what does it mean to leave a legacy? And what does it mean to leave behind something even after I'm gone? So I don't have that fully baked yet, but I would say that's another part of it that I'm brewing on.
Well, Jenna, I really appreciate your time today. And really, for anybody that's listening, if you liked her story and the things that she shared today, I would highly recommend that you check out her website and also follow her on LinkedIn, because I've been following you for a little while and you do put out really, really great content.
Thank you.
I'm really grateful for the good things you're putting out into the world. So thanks for your time.
Thank you. Have a great day, guys.
Thanks for listening to another episode of The Everyday Worker. If you want to find more great content just like this to help you in your career change journey, go to everydayworker.com. There you'll find my blog, all my podcasts, and other free resources such as my Career Change Masterclass, where I share what's stopping you from switching to a fulfilling career and how you can overcome those challenges. Again, go to everydayworker.com to learn more.